Hello. Hello. We hope you enjoyed lunch and the vendor session. Before we begin, I'd like to point out that the letters and the numbers for those of you keeping track of continuing ed credits, the sign-in number is number 4, and the sign-out letter is C. Also, if you need any assistance during the lecture, please do not hesitate to call on me or my good friend Anne Marie, who is floating around. I can't see where she is. She's here. Ask me. For those individuals who are earning CEU credits, please look through your CEO evaluation form and fill it out at the close of the session. Oh, I want to wait a few more minutes.
What was that number again? Was that
the number was 4.
Sorry.
And the sign out letter was C.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. We are so grateful to TIC, the Talking Information Center Network, for recording some of our sessions today, including this one. Please know that a voice recording for the session and copy of the PowerPoint presentation will be available on the Focus website in the Focus Conference Archive. The web address can be found on the black and white business card on your yellow folder, FocusOnVisionsAndVisionLoss.org. We are very grateful for Carol for sharing her work in this way with us and for your continued learning. It is now my pleasure to formally introduce Carolyn M. Elvison, Master of Education, Certified O&M Specialist, Certified Occupational Therapy Assistant, Rehabilitation Teaching Supervisor, and Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are so appreciative of Carolyn's efforts for this presentation. She has presented in previous years at our conference, and we are thrilled to have her back, sharing her expertise with us today. Carolyn will be presenting Come Learn How Flirting and Kissing Fit into Rehabilitation Teaching. Please join me in welcoming Carolyn. Thank you.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. So today you guys came to hear all about how to flirt and how to kiss. In a very short way, how you kiss is you do this, and how you flirt is you say, how you doing? lesson learned. Now you guys can move on. I will say, I've been doing this for quite a while, so it takes a lot to figure out how I'm going to present to you guys to make it interesting and engaging. So this was a topic, rehabilitation teaching, that I do for the so I will just get started because we are short on time. I'm just going to hold this.
Do you have a phone or something?
I do not have anything that it's near. So you guys are going to say flirting and kissing. Come on. Really, I mean, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's towards the end of the day. What are you going to teach me? So basically what it is, if you can all see, is flirting and kissing. Rehabilitation teaching, you're going to say, yes, it's true. During the session, you'll learn how to flirt, find little independent rehabilitation techniques, as well as how to kiss, keep it safe and simple. You'll learn briefly about the most common eye diseases, be exposed to rehabilitation teaching strategies and techniques, as well as see and learn some adaptive equipment, and in the end, how to flirt and kiss like a rehab teacher. So I want you all to think about it for a second, and in your own life, I want you to think about all the daily tasks that you do. How would you do it, and how would you adapt it in a safe or simple way if you had no vision? In short, there is a way, and that is rehabilitation teaching. Come on in. So you might ask, why would someone need rehabilitation teaching? Well, people will experience a reduction in vision, or more specifically have low vision, due to various eye conditions, which then can result in a form of a visual impairment, requiring rehab teaching strategies or adaptations to be put in place. The National Eye Institute defines low vision as a visual impairment not correctable by standard glasses, contact lenses, medicine, or surgery that interferes with activities of daily life. Most eye care professionals use the term low vision to describe permanently reduced vision that can't be corrected. At my agency, we work with people who are legally blind, and there's a definition that denotes that, which is 20 over 200 or worse in the best corrected eye, or a field deficit of 10 degrees or less. So that's legal blindness. In the other scope that you might run into with people with visual impairments, they might have low vision and for purposes for insurances that they have occupational therapy or vision rehab therapy reimbursed services, it's 20 over 70. And the functional definition of low vision is uncorrectable vision that interferes with daily activities. If you have low vision and if you want a low vision examination, it's a much different process than just going to an optometrist or an ophthalmologist. It's a much more involved process. Everybody with me so far?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you are falling asleep, there's candy at the front of the be sure to grab it on your way out to the right.
No?
So I just want to briefly go through some eye diseases that you may hear, you may know about, and you may also encounter. Two different types that I put them into categories were structural and neurological. Any of these vision impairments may result in a visual impairment. So for structural issues, we may run into macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts, a retinal detachment, diabetic retinopathy, or optic nerve atrophy. For neurological, you may see people with traumatic brain injury or TBI, a closed head injury, cortical visual impairment, a cerebrovascular accident or a stroke, or even a neurological or genetic etiology. This is really bad feedback. I'm sorry for you guys. So briefly, macular degeneration is the progressive and irreversible visual impairment. It results from the deterioration of the central part of the retina. The central part of your eye is the macula, and more specifically the fovea. And the macula is what's responsible for fine color, details, seeing faces, reading. So you can imagine if you have an impairment in your structural vision in the center of your eye, it can have an impact on your function. So on the left-hand side, what I have is a slide. It's a picture of two little boys, and they're very cute, side by side. And on the right, and that's normal vision on the left. On the right-hand side, I have a picture of the boys' faces, which are occluded. So if for a very brief second, what you could do is take your fist, and you could place it right in the center of your eyes and then the bridge of your nose. If you try to look through that and you see that big blind spot in the center of your eyes, that's basically a gross interpretation of what someone with macular degeneration would see. You can't see straight on. So it's going to have functional impacts. You might have problems seeing faces, overall distortion of vision, trouble with reading or writing. Depth perception issues, you might find these people that they're trying to use their foot for mobility purposes, trying to find how high a stair is or how deep a curve is.
This is terrible.
Contrast sensitivity loss, you'll find people that have difficulty distinguishing between foreground and background, so increasing the contrast is always good. It has impacts on your activities of daily living, such as eating, stairs, reading, and color perception problems. So you might have to teach eccentric viewing, which is looking out of the corner of your eye. And you might also find people that have an Amsler grid, and these people can look at the center of it, and they can see whether or not their vision is changing. So most eye doctors will give this to someone who has macular degeneration so they can monitor it at home and see if their condition is worsening. Glaucoma is the actual opposite in functional terms for macular degeneration, where the central vision is kept, but your peripheral vision is what is the problem. It's increased intraocular pressure, which results in damage to the optic nerve, which results in peripheral visual field loss. So this time what I want you to do is take your hand and make a little circle in the center, and I want you to close one eye, and I want you to put your hand up to your open eye, and then you can look through that very tiny little circle. And you can see that you can see straight on. However, your peripheral vision is what is not available to you. Everybody with me so far?
Yeah.
So these folks will have functional implications. Like I said, peripheral field loss. They'll have contrast sensitivity issues. You might find that they bump into objects, people, or have overall mobility problems with stairs. You'll see that their heads are constantly on a swivel. They might be scanning, tracking, tracing their environment, and constantly looking from side to side because, again, they can see straight on, but on the sides is where their issues are. We call this the sneak thief of vision because it can lead to total blindness quickly and without warning. If you have glaucoma, it's important that you get regular pressure checks because every day that you see someone, they look the same. You know, if you see me now and you see me a year from now, there's a lot of time that's passed. My hair may be different, etc. But if you saw me every day, those slight changes, you wouldn't notice. That's the same thing with glaucoma. You see things in your environment every day, and you're not noticing that your peripheral vision is decreasing every single day. So cataracts. I like to describe this as a clouding of the lens, and it looks like you're looking through wax paper. On the left-hand side, I'm sorry, I should go back, but for glaucoma, I had normal vision with the two little boys and you can see straight on that their faces are not occluded or neither is their peripheral vision, then on the right-hand side of a glaucoma, their faces are not obscured, but the periphery is. My apologies. So cataracts, I have the same schematic up to kind of just make people aware of how it looks. On the left-hand side for normal vision, you've got that same picture of little boys. On the right-hand side, it looks like you're literally looking through wax paper or a very cloudy lens. And this is actually where objects appear blurry, cloudy, and you can have an overall blurry vision. Objects may appear hazy or faded in color. You might have difficulty seeing at night. You might have a need for increased or brighter contrast to see or read. And it can be corrected in some cases where they actually take out the intraocular lens and put in a new one. But after that, postoperatively, you have to be aware that people might be much more sensitive to glare and to light with anything that you might be doing functionally. You guys still with me? Okay, I see people nodding. That's good. Well, you know, it's after lunch, so you know, you have that crash sometimes. So the retinal detachment, this can be considered a medical emergency. And what you need to be careful is this, you might hear somebody say, it looks like there's a curtain coming down in front of me. If somebody says that to you or if you're experiencing it yourself, that can actually be where the retina is pulling away from the back of your eye. And that is a surgical intervention that you needed to get to the emergency room and have intervention quickly, or you can lose whatever remaining vision you have. And diabetic retinopathy, this is due to diabetes. The longer that someone has diabetes, the increased chances that they're going to have visual problems and have problems with their eyes. This is because the retinal changes that occur eventually result in the growth of new pathway of new abnormal blood vessels into their eyes and can disrupt vision. So on the top, what you'll see is a mountain range, and it looks like you're looking out into the distance. And then below, what you'll see is that there's very obscure pieces of your vision. I tell people that the most gross way to describe this is like looking through Swiss cheese. So if you put up a piece of Swiss cheese, there's different pieces of your vision that are missing. So what exactly is rehab teaching, and how can it help your folks? And how is this kissing and flirting? How does this all tie together? Now you know a little bit about some eye conditions. You know some of the functional impacts. Rehabilitation teaching, or vision rehab therapy, is defined as the educational process that prepares a blind or visually impaired person to perform daily living skills independently in any environment. We see people at home, in school, at their job sites, wherever they may be, because we go to them. Can it help your consumer? Yes. Even the simplest strategy can help. And you're going to say, okay, Carolyn, keep going. How is this going to help me? How is this going to help my folks? What you want to do is you want to look at the person's individual environment, their daily living skills, as well as their current ability to function within those environments. Then you look at any of the devices and strategies that I'm going to go through and figure out if even the smallest one can help individuals to set and achieve those goals, which lead to increased self-esteem, independent living skills of all ages, despite their vision loss. Sounds like the folks that you work with, right? So how exactly is this done? It's the KISS method. Everybody's been on the edge of their seat with the KISS method. It's really, it makes me happy to know you're laughing because that means you're engaged. So it's actually keeping it safe and simple. Is Bob McGilvery in the room? He's not. He asked me, he said, what does KISS mean? I said, you're going to have to come to my session and find out. Everybody thinks it's keep it simple, stupid. Well, I mean, so in this case, it's going to be keeping it safe and simple. So adaptive strategies and equipment to keep it safe and simple will assist your folks to achieve success in those chosen activities of daily living. So what you might want to do is you might want to use markings, tape or stickers, and I'll go through more things in detail in a few minutes. You might want to just look at simple magnification. You might want to increase the size or the distance of an item being viewed. You might use memory devices, calendars, lists, picture boards, auditory boards, electronic devices. Teach scanning and tracking techniques. These are all safe and simple things you can do. Use common terminology when you're talking to a client so that this way you know and they know that you're talking about the same thing. Years ago, I had an issue where I had a client call in and they said that, geez, Joe isn't working for me. And what had happened is in my teaching, I had told my clients, I had named one of my little devices Joe, because after you do this a few times, you have to keep yourself engaged as well. And the person on the other end of the phone called in and said, Joe isn't working. And the girl who answered the phone, who's Susanna, said, we don't have anybody named Joe working here. So it was a miscommunication. And what it was I had my own terminology with the client, and no one else knew it. So if you're working in a group of people, make sure you guys all know what things are called and that you're all on the same page.
Excuse me, what was Joe?
I will get to that, Susan. These are my coworkers and they like to heckle me, and I told them they had to sit in the back of the room, but they don't listen. So the other thing that you want to do is you want to allow for maximum independence, even if it's only one part of the task. When people say to me, I want to learn how to cook, and I say, what would you like to cook? And they say, Thanksgiving dinner. I say, well, have you ever cooked before? Nope, don't even know how to boil water. So you have to be careful that you want to make sure that you can maximize one piece at a time and make it easier for them to be successful. Use positive reinforcement. Reduce overall physical clutter as well as visual clutter. If everyone can see, or anyone who can see, my table in front of you is completely visually cluttered. And like our keynote speaker said today, it's easier to find things that are in a less cluttered environment than not, which goes for people who have normal vision as well, never mind somebody who's visually impaired. You'd want to organize and categorize things. I'm an organized person by nature, drives my husband insane. But it's important when you're working with people with visual impairments that you don't disorganize their system or you teach them to become more organized. You want to put things in the same place all the time, group similar items together, use cubbies, baskets, Tupperware, anything that can keep things separate. You might have to evaluate lighting and glare, increase or change the contrast, use a multi-sensory approach, task analysis, which is breaking down the task, and also use modeling, repetition, hand-over-hand or hand-under-hand. So those are all things that are just safe and simple and can be employed in all of your teaching strategies. And you're saying, yep, I'm with you so far. That sounds great, but what is it really? So how does this flirting thing, besides saying how you go on? So when you flirt, you find little independent rehabilitation techniques. It's the combination of using these adaptive strategies with the adaptive equipment, which are different gizmos and gadgets, for an individual who has a vision loss. For example, it's the simple and safe process of making a flat panel microwave accessible to someone who has to warm up a meal. It's labeling a drawer with Braille or large print to make it easier for them to find a fork, plate, or cooking tool in the drawer. It's creating and implementing organizational strategies, always putting something back in the same place every time. Replacing a regular phone with a large print phone with memory devices. Using adaptive equipment in meal preparation. So it's finding all those little independent things that can help the person achieve their goals. Using large print Braille auditory labels, providing a talking large print or Braille timepiece, utilizing alternative strategies to identify money, teaching the alternative methods of self-care and grooming, such as putting toothpaste on a toothbrush. You can teach those, and it's very safe and simple, as well as independent for them to do by themselves. Providing and teaching the use of a device to sign someone's name. It's a very simple thing, and I'll show you in a minute. Training to use a handheld magnifier, looking at lighting, or if you have somebody who wants to do leisure time activities, making adaptations for those things. So anything that the person wants to do, you find those little independent teaching things and then apply them. So now you know how to kiss and flirt. Okay? Very simple. And I drew you all in here with some big guys. Really, all that simple. So what we do when we want to look at somebody's maximization of remaining vision, we might use a magnification device. So we have simple magnifiers. So you can have handheld magnifiers that come in different strengths. And what I'm going to do is just hold up a couple different of them, and if at the end of the session you have a few minutes and want to see the difference of them, you can feel free. There's different strengths of magnifiers. The larger the diameter of the magnifier, the lower power it is. And then as you increase the magnifier in strength, the smaller the diameter of what you're going to look through. So people say to me all the time, I want a big magnifier that magnifies a lot. And I say, okay, you can get the Hubble telescope. That's great. Excellent. Because what happens is you have to actually bend glass, and when they refract the light, to increase the image underneath it. So magnification is a whole other assessment in and of itself. But you can actually use handheld magnifiers, stand magnifiers, lighted ones, non-lighted, desktop CCTVs, handheld CCTVs, anything that's going to help them increase the magnification. You might want to increase magnification by, it says, relative size or distance. That's literally increasing the size of what someone's looking at. So if they're reading, you might want to increase the font, or you can bring it closer to them, because if you bring something closer, it increases it in size. You might need to use lighting. So we might have flashlights. I can't bring everything, but you can imagine that using a simple flashlight to actually focus on something that you might be looking at can help. If you need task lighting, there are gooseneck lamps, there's halogen lamps, there's LED lamps, so any kind of lighting that the person might need, ambient, natural, focus lighting, etc. Or you can use sunshades to actually increase the contrast If you use this yellow sunshade, this will actually increase the contrast for someone and help them to see better. And if they have cataracts or their glare is they're too sensitive to glare, you can use a darker pair of sunshades to decrease the lighting for them. Or you might have something that's a low vision device that's prescribed by a provider, such as a magnifier, a monocular, or certain glasses. So daily living. What can you do in someone's daily living to help them be more independent? You can use tactile bumps. In your red bags that everybody got, you actually have something from MaxiAves, which is commercially available. I made these well before those were available, so they look a little sketchy, that's why. But you can see that you might want to use tactile markings on a microwave, an oven, a toaster oven, a washer, a dryer, or a remote control. If you think about yourself in your own flat panel microwave that you might need to use popcorn, for example, it's a flat panel. You can't tell the difference where all the buttons are. You can take one simple little bump, and you can put it on the popcorn button, and you can have a very happy consumer. So now they can make popcorn by themselves. It's very simple in that way. If you had the task that they wanted to set the oven dial, you could actually use markers or you could use puffy paint to denote which temperatures are on an oven dial or on a washer and dryer, what the cycle is. So again, maybe they can't do the entire task of laundry, but they want to be independent in sort of a piece of it. You can make it independent for them. Medication organization. There are different ways that you can organize your medication to know that you're safe and you're still taking them correctly. You can have large print pill bottles. So I have different pill boxes, I have different large print pill boxes for people. And in order to make them safe and independent, maybe they need to know first which medications they're taking. So maybe they need to use elastics. So they want to know that they take their medication once a day. They put an elastic on it once. If they need to take their medication twice a day, they put two elastics. You following me so far? Mm-hmm. So very simple strategies so they can be independent. You might want to use those organizational strategies in every room, in a kitchen, with closets. Some people are organized in and of themselves, and some people are not. So if you go into someone's house and they say, I want to be organized, you can give them all the strategies that you want, you can do it for them, but if they don't follow through and they don't take your information, the next time you come back, it's going to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. So you want to try to help implement it slowly and in different areas of their life so they start to figure out what strategies are implemented and helpful for them. We look at house cleaning and laundry. So you're going to teach somebody how to clean. You're not just going to teach them to wipe a surface and that'll be done with it. You might want to teach them to overclean. You're going to have them swipe from left to right and then from front to back so that you're overcleaning the area. And with laundry, you might want to use, like I said, these little bump dots to help the pieces of the puzzle come together so they can be independent in those. Teaching key identification or placement in a lock. So everybody has keys, and you might have four or five keys on your key rings, and you say, I can't tell the difference in my keys. You take a bump dot, and you put it on the key that's used most often. I do this with my work keys. I come in, I've got my bags, I've got my water, and I walk in, I can't find my key, so I actually put a bump dot on my work key. So all I have to do is take it, tactically I can identify it, and I'm good to go. So you can do this very simply. Just put super glue, and they know which key it is. And then in order to put it in the lock, what you would do is you use two hands, which I don't have at the moment, is you would use your non-dominant hand to actually feel where the key insertion of the lock would be, and you leave your finger there. And then you take the key and you place it next to the hand. Because we are binocular creatures, but we're also bilateral creatures. If I asked you all to clap your hands right now while your eyes were closed, you wouldn't need your vision to do that. So when you do a task, you might want to use your hands and use them together, and so both sides of your brain are talking to each other. Make sense? You're all thinking, can I clap my hands without clapping my hands? So electrical outlets are another thing. Do they need to be marked themselves? Everybody has these beautiful houses nowadays. They have white walls and they have white electrical outlets. For somebody who's visually impaired, they can't even find where they need to plug something in. So what you can do at the hardware store is you can get a 35-cent outlet cover and you can just change the color of the outlet cover itself. Or you can mark the outlet with puffy paint. That's the wrong one. You can mark the outlet with puffy paint or you can mark it with tape. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that in order to let somebody be able to plug something in. The other thing I like to do is I like to use power strips, because instead of plugging things in all the time, you can just plug something in a power strip. If they have a cognitive issue or they have a tactile issue, they can just flip the switch back and forth, and that will turn the item on and off for them, rather than trying to plug something in, especially with somebody who has tactile issues or diabetes. So adaptive money identification. So we have, and there are available wallets that actually have divided sections in them that you can put different denominations of money in. So in one of the sections, you would have a $5 bill. In another section, you would have a $1 bill. In another section, you'd have your big old Benjamin. So you'd know which one is which. We have women's wallets as well. I don't know why they traditionally made the woman's wallet bigger. I haven't really quite figured that out. I guess we tend to have more credit cards. If you look at the woman's wallet, it's like 15 sections. But the man's wallet is only like three. So it's always been a curiosity of mine. And there's also different ways that you can identify money because you can fold it in different ways. You can keep a $1 bill flat. You can fold a $5 bill in half. You can take the $10 bill, fold it in half the long way, and then fold it in half again. So if you have this in your wallet organized a certain way, you can figure out which money denomination it is. And people are saying nobody uses cash anymore, which is pretty much true. But in the rare instances that they do, when they want to identify, you can. Coins, mostly nobody uses coins. This is like an ancient lecture for some people. But it's a good parlor trick, and it can keep people entertained. That you can tell your friends, I can tell the difference in coins, and if not, you can give me $50 and you can make some money off of them. Because quarters are large and they have a rigid edge. Dimes are small and they have a rigid edge. Nickels are smooth and they're bigger, and they're bigger than a dime. And pennies are also have a smooth edge and smaller than a nickel and just bigger than a dime. So that's just an easy way for you guys to be able to identify coins as well. Not that many people use them, but it's fun to teach kids too. Gives them something to do and teach their tactile methods. We might want to look at somebody's personal care. So do they need just a simple magnification mirror for them to be able to put on lipstick or look at if they have a prosthetic eye, be able to insert it or make sure that there's no infections? They want to do eyeliner, something simple like that. You might discuss their approaches to shopping. Do they need assistance when they're shopping? Are they an advocate for themselves? Do they know how to advocate for themselves? In daily living, we utilize low vision, braille and talking watches, clocks, and digital clocks. This is just a smattering of what's available, but you can use a clock that talks.
The time is 1:25.
It really is. And this one has a date too. So there are clocks, there are watches, there are braille options as well. And if someone does not want a talking option, but they need more contrast, because maybe they have a low vision issue and they can't see their watch that as well as they used to, but they don't want it going off or disturbing anything, we have low vision option watches. So they have contrast and they have bigger faces. And also we look at people's adaptive and safe meal preparation. So we talked about somebody who wants to be able to cook. We start small, and then we might look at the different options that they have. So we might look at, so I'm going to get into the cooking thing in a minute. Here we go. So in the kitchen, what you might look at is you might use Velcro color or high contrast markings, tape, stickers, bumps, puffy paint on appliances. Anything is like this is commercially available. You don't need a specific vendor to be able to provide it. If you go to Lowe's, you can get these bump dots because they sell them in the cabinet section because people use them so that the cabinets don't bump their wall. And it's tactile, so you can use it. You can go to Joann Fabrics. You can find puffy paint. It comes in different colors. Comes in red, orange, yellow, green, neon, all that other stuff. So if you don't want to buy it from MaxiAids or another vendor, you can just get it commercially available. You might want to make large print or tactile labels on drawers or cabinets to find items. You might mark existing or use high contrast or large print measuring cups. So what I mean by that is you might have a measuring cup in your cabinet, and somebody says, well, I can't tell the difference between the one cup, the quarter cup, the half a cup. So what you can do, you don't need to know Braille, but you can use two bump dots on a measuring cup to denote that it's a half a cup. Or you can use the number two, and you can draw the number two with puffy paint so that when they either see it or they feel it, they know that that's the half a cup. Very simple and safe. Again, kissing people. We're all kissing. Or you want to use a large print measuring cup. These are commercially available. You can get them even at Job Lot or anything like that. They have big numbers. They have contrast. So for people who want to do cooking, but they don't want to use tactile, they want to use their vision still, and it's available, you can use low vision and high contrast measuring cups and measuring spoons. Cutting boards. This is one of my favorite things. It's a cutting board. Black on one side, white on the other. So if you're going to cut a cucumber and it has the skin on it, it's going to be green. So you might want to use the white side because the skin is still on it. If you like your skin on cucumbers, that's fine. Use it like this. But once you take the skin off the cucumber and it's white, You put the white cucumber on top of the white cutting board. You're not going to be able to see it very well. So what you would do is flip over the cutting board and use the white cucumber on the black cutting board. See how simple that is? Mm-hmm. Everybody's shaking their head and saying, I wish I'd want that. Yes. Me too. Gloves. These are a very good thing for people. You can buy these at, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond, Walmart, anything like that. It helps because it has a grip on it. So if you have somebody who might have some tactile issues or any kind of fine motor issues, it still gives them enough availability in the glove to be able to feel what's going on. You can reach into a toaster oven or a microwave or a pot on the stove, and it's going to keep them nice and safe and not getting burned. When you're doing any kind of kitchen tasks, what you'd want to do is you want to organize the space. We like to use trays. If you have a cafeteria tray, you can get them in different colors so that this way it adds contrast as well. When you're doing a task on a tray, you can use it for different reasons. One of them is that it has a lipped edge. And if you don't have a tray, you can use a cookie sheet, because cookie sheets are also sometimes a little bit bigger than this, but it has a lipped edge. You can use this for actually separating a space for someone. So if you're cooking, what you'd want to do is put the tray in front of you, and it actually defines where you're working. So if somebody's visually impaired, it keeps them more on task and not reaching out in a certain area. They can find the edge of the tray and use this. If they're pouring, if they're doing any kind of sandwich making or anything like that, they can use the tray on front of them, and then this way they're not spilling it all over the counter. If they happen to have a spill, it doesn't go on top of the counter and then on the floor. It stays contained. These are also good for contrast. When I have people who are doing their pills and they're taking their pills out of their pill bottles and putting them into a pill box, it stays on in the surface, but also if the pill falls, it's contrast. Usually the pills are white or a different light color. It's on top of a tray, so then they can find it a little bit easier. Is that helpful? Use a lipped plate or a divided plate for chasing food. So lipped plates are really good because if you can imagine, if you're visually impaired and you have the food in front of you and you're trying to find it and you keep pushing it and it's going off the edge of the plate, if you find a lipped plate is very helpful. It can keep the food in the plate itself, and then you can just be able to stab it or use a fork or a knife or a spoon to spoon it up. So my friend Joe now comes into the picture. Susie, where is Joe? So when you are pouring, there are a couple of different techniques you can use. I mentioned the tray already. What you want to do is either use a tray or sometimes a bowl. And what you can do is put the item that you're pouring, the cup, the mug, whatever it is, you can put that on top of the tray or in the bowl or on top of a plate. If you wanted to pour, you would be pouring into your cup. If the cup happened to overspill, it would spill on top of the tray and it catches a spill. You can use your finger to put the finger inside of the cup so that when the liquid rises from the bottom, it touches your finger. If you're pouring it for yourself, if you're using a cold beverage, I would not suggest this for someone with a hot beverage. Or you can use what's called a liquid level indicator, or my case, it's Joe. Sure. You're looking to see, what the hell is this Joe? So Joe, what it is, after a while, after like 5 or 10 years of doing the same skill over and over, you think, I gotta get a little lively with this. So one day I was a little bored with my job, and I had a little old lady, and I said, she was not into this at all. She was like, I do not want this thing, no idea. Oh, I'm gonna make it fun. So what Joe is, it's called a say when or a liquid level indicator. He has a hat on the top of his head, and it's bright orange, and he has two arms out in front of him, and he has a battery. His battery are his legs, the arms, the palms are out in front of him. And what you do is you take this little gizmo and you hang his arms on the inside of the cup. So the battery is on the outside and the battery housing is on the outside. What the person then does is they pour the liquid into the cup. The liquid rises from the bottom and it touches the two prongs. And this one will either buzz or beep, so be careful. It will beep when the liquid touches the prongs. That's your indication to stop pouring. If they don't like the beeping one, they can have one that vibrates. So once the prongs touch the, you can hear that vibrating. And if you're holding your hand on top of the cup while you're pouring with one hand, you'll actually feel the vibration or you'll hear it vibrate against the cup. So my Joe story is this. This is his name, Joe. So what happened is the little guy stopped working. The woman actually had put him in backwards and poured water over him. He got his head wet, around him. Joe's not working. So she calls in, and she's frantic. But she used her tea every morning. Joe is not working. And poor Susanna says, there's no way named Joe who works here. And I hear this, and I go, oh, yeah, that's my little old lady. So then I explain to Susanna the story. She goes, oh, that makes sense now. Joe wasn't working. So We had to then go back and reteach her again. His arms have to be on the inside. His legs have to be on the outside. So that's that common terminology. Make sure that you and your coworkers know who Joe is. You might want to use a spoon to spread peanut butter or butter rather than a knife, because a knife can sometimes have a jagged edge. If you're pushing it along the bread, it can be frustrating to someone, but the spoon has a smooth back. So if you're spooning the butter or jelly or anything like that on a piece of bread, it's a little bit less complicated than trying to use the knife. And also using Tupperware or Ziploc bags to separate foods. All you ever wanted to know about rehab teaching, folks. Right here, your pleasure. So eating, we talk about the clock method. What I did is I put some numbers on top of the clock. Did you all know that they're not teaching the clock anymore to children in school?
Right.
Big problem. My son is 7. They're like, Mom, we don't teach it that way. They teach digital.
Yep.
Big problem. So of course I've become the, pariah.
You will learn how to use a clock method. You will learn what the face of a clock looks like.
So basically it's using the face of a clock to denote where something is in space or something is in an environment for someone to use. As long as you all know, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, etc. And it's in relation to the person who you're speaking to. So you guys are all 12 o'clock to me, and I'm all 12 o'clock to you, but the person on my left is on your right. So I have to make sure that I'm also aware of that in my surroundings and can actually describe it to someone. You can use this for identifying foods on a plate. Your potatoes at 6 o'clock, your asparagus is at 2 o'clock, or something in your environment. You can say your water is at 1 o'clock, your teacup is at 11 o'clock. You might want to utilize contrast when you're able to on the table and with food or plate items. If you have a completely white tablecloth and you have a white plate and you have spaghetti with no sauce on it, there's no contrast, so someone isn't going to be able to see their food. Something simple might be changing the color of the plate if they want to use a red plate and they don't use sauce with their spaghetti, or using a white plate if they do use sauce with their spaghetti. Say that 3 times as fast. And then also considering if you want to use a tray or something underneath it to also increase contrast and layers on your table so they can identify it better. Using a pusher, which is a utensil or a piece of bread to push the food to one place or another. You can imagine if you're chasing something on your plate all the time, it's not much fun, so you might want to use a knife or a utensil or a piece of bread to push your food to a certain area and then use your other hand if you're able to get it. Trailing the table with your hand. This is important for people because what happens is when you have a glass or an object on the table that has some kind of liquid in it, what happens is we always reach out with our hand and you can knock it over just from the force of using your shoulder and your elbow and your wrist. So what you teach people to do is just trail the table. So you turn your hand upside down, literally put your fingers on the table, and it slows you down, number one. And number two, it gives you the availability to make more contact with the cup or the glass, and it's you're not going to knock it over because you're not reaching out. So that force isn't coming from your upper body. And also utilizing Dyson. This is Dyson. Looks like a fruit roll-up, if you ask me. It always has. But what this is it's a non-skid item that you can put under things. So if you're on a table and you wanted to put a plate on top of it, and the person has difficulty and they're always pushing their plate off the table, this is actually a non-skid surface. If you can't get Dyson, what you can get is a shelf liner from Walmart or from BJ's or anything like that. It's not as grippy, but it does the same thing. So communication, how can we help people to communicate? What you might want to do is you might want to use a large print phone or a large button phone so that it's more eligible for them to be able to use it independently. You might want to have one with memory functions or a picture phone. You can make a list of large print phone numbers or emergency contacts with a bold paper and bold line pen. Cell phones, everybody says to me nowadays, I want to be able to use my cell phone, but they're having difficulty. The iPhone comes ready to use and adapted right out of the box. You have to learn the essential functions of it, but it is adaptable. Maybe you want to use a large print desk or wall calendar, so that this way you can actually allow people to know and be oriented to time and space and date. You can mark this up with bump dots, you can mark it with colorful stickers, you can write on it, anything for the person to be able to orient and know what, you know, if this is an activity on a certain day that they're doing, circle it, any way that the person is gonna be able to use it independently. Use recording devices, such as the Pen Friend, I'll get into that in another minute. Kindles, iPads, or computer programs you can use for communication. Adaptive record keeping. Maybe you need something simple such as a check guide, because there's somebody who's still doing their checks. I know it seems like a little ancient, but some people actually still do use checks. So they need a check guide to be able to do it independently. They want to be able to use it, and they don't want somebody else to do it for them. If they want to do a signature and they want to be able to sign their own things, use a signature guide. All it is a piece of plastic with a cutout in the middle. When you place this on or near the line where the person needs to sign, it gives them a guide so that they're not writing uphill or downhill.
And if you put that with a paperclip?
You can put it with a paperclip, you can put it with a clipboard, you can put it with a clothespin, anything that the person's going to be able to keep the guide to the paper. Good question, Margaret. You can use simple things like bold line paper. Bold line paper comes in a variety of sizes. You can use thick bold line paper, you can use thin bold line paper, you can use yellow bold line paper. So there's a lot of different options. If it's something that's not available to you, you can't purchase it, you can make it on your own computer. You can use a Word document and just make the lines, and then you can increase it a little bit on the copier, and you have bold line paper. Or you might want to use a writing guide. So if somebody wants to write out a list, or if they have a task they need to do, you can put the writing guide on top of the piece of paper and then use a bold line pen, and then they can write out what they need to, and then when they take the guide off, then it's easier for them to read. Some of these things are really, really simple, and I think if I had invented them, I'd be in Tahiti right now, but and also Amazon Echo and Google Home, we're having a lot of people use those adaptive devices now to make appointments, keep appointments, use reminders. So the Amazon devices with Alexa and Echo and Google are up and coming, so that'll probably be a lecture for next year. I have to keep up with the times. Assistive technology, they're simple and complex. Simple assistive technology is literally a pen and a piece of paper or a slate and a stylus. It's simple. Complex is more of along the lines of electronics. So you might have someone who needs a device that can record a simple phone number or a day and a time of an appointment. So that might be a Wilson, and this all is a little mini recorder for them. Or the pen friend, which has come into fashion, and we employ a lot. For people who don't know Braille, who don't have any vision or low vision, or they do like techie stuff, the pen friend. Raise your hand if you know what the pen friend is. Okay, about half the room. So what the pen friend is it's an electronic recordable device. So what you would do is you can use these little tags, and you can record your voice on them to label anything. And I mean virtually anything. I think through the years we've labeled just about everything when it comes to these things. So you can use these tags to label pill bottles, shampoo, conditioner, clothing, CDs, DVDs, anything like that. So what it is a recordable device that once it turns on, you place... This is where technology fails me. So what I did is I made a label that's very small, and it's attached to an elastic, and I would put this on a pill bottle. And then I would take my pen friend, and I would actually put the label maker on it, so that once it actually is recorded, the person just needs to go back and touch the label, and it gives you a recordable label. So you can actually, we've had people do an entire calendar with these reminders on them. We've had large print address books where they can't see, but we use the address book to do a voice recorded label for them, and it keeps the person independent. I had a person in a nursing home who used it for activities. They just needed like four different things they needed to be able to identify for them to be able to do their day and keep oriented. So there's a way that you can do it, you just have to think outside the box. But the pen friend has come into fashion, and it's come into play and used in a lot of ways, and we found a lot of success with it. There's that Amazon product again, Alexa and Google. I think that we found through our practice with people who are not cognitively impaired or have intellectual disability a lot of success with it, but I think it also has a point for somebody who has an intellectual disability that all they need to do is just talk to something. They can play music, they can turn on lights, they can interact with it, ask the time, ask the weather. So that's a little bit more of a higher level, but certainly it's applicable in a lot of situations. We might assess somebody's keyboarding skills. We might look at to see if they have the ability to type or if they want to type, but they can't see the keyboard. So we might use large print overlays, or we might mark the keyboard with our tactile devices. screen reading, enlarging software. We might look at things and have JAWS or Zoom text for them to be able to interact with the computer. iPads, iPhones, using the adaptive features that they have with VoiceOver and Zoom, and also using the low vision and blindness apps that are available for those devices. Leisure time activity. Sometimes people, they just want to be engaged in something that the other folks that they're doing, they might want to do bingo. So we have large print bingo cards, extra large print bingo cards. We have smaller large print bingo cards. Or they might want to do something independently, so they're going to do a large print word search. To me, these things have never seemed super large print, but I've had people who've been able to use them, or I take them and I copy them, and then I blow them up on the copier just a little bit bigger, and I increase the contrast, or if they can use a magnifier in some ways, that's helpful. We might use large print playing cards for them to be involved in a card game, or we have braille cards for them. There's all different kinds of games. There's all different kinds of games that are adaptable, and you can adapt them yourselves. There's large print braille and tactile Monopoly, Scrabble, checkers, auditory balls. This is probably one of the more favorite things with kiddos, is these balls actually can make a sound. So, I'm trying to do this one-handed, sorry. They have beeping Easter eggs, all different kinds of things. So this is supposed to turn on. Nope. I'm at 1,000, guys. That's because you guys got me at the beginning of the movie, right? So this, once it's turned on, okay, so you can hear this beeping. If for somebody who's blind or visually impaired, it gives you an auditory sound as to where the ball is located. They have footballs, baseball, soccer balls, they have beatball teams, beeping Easter eggs, like I said. So if somebody wants to be engaged in activity, there's ways that they can do that. The Talking Book Library for the talking books that they have, books on tape, or I don't call them book on tape anymore, the digital book machine that they have. Descriptive video service is used when people want to watch a movie. It's describing somebody what's happening in the scenes. If you want to do sewing or crocheting, you might want to assess, maybe they need to increase the contrast of the yarn they're using, or increase the size of the needles, or increase the lighting that they're using to make that possible. Again, Amazon Echo and the Google Home, because you can interact with these things and you can ask them to play Jeopardy with you. You can say, Alexa, tell me a joke. Alexa, play Jeopardy. So it can keep somebody engaged in that way as well. And we also have things like TV glasses. So if somebody's primary leisure time activity is actually watching television, we have glasses that can available make it easier for them to see the television, or you might want to look at whether or not they just have to be placed closer to the television, or whether or not the glare from a window is impairing their vision. So looking at all those things can be helpful. You might also be able to modify board games. You can change the shape or add a marking to a playing piece so they can be distinguished. So if you have Connect Four, there's black and there's red, but they're both round and they're both full circles. What you can do is you can drill a hole through one of those Connect Four piece colors, and then somebody who's blind or visually impaired can interact a little easier because they can tell the difference in the pieces and when they can feel the board as to where they go. You can add raised outlines using glue, fabric paints, high marks, foam boards, Velcro to prevent pieces from slipping. If you want to do tic-tac-toe, you can use any kind of Velcro to mark the pieces of a bigger piece, and so you have the X's that have the Velcro on it, and the O's that have Velcro on it too. It's more tactile for someone. And I have just a small list here of do's and don'ts. Do identify yourself and provide information as to who you are upon entering a room. Do let the visually impaired person take your arm. Do not push or pull the individual. Do put the individual's hand on the back of a chair or allow them to seat themselves. Do give clear directions that are clear and directional words, such as left, right, up, and down, or use the clock-based method. Do not say here or there. I have people all the time say to me, oh, it's over there. That's great, but I can't see where over there is. So using those clear-cut words is very important to someone. You don't want to pet or distract a service dog. It's a working dog. That would be like somebody covering your eyes when you're driving. That's not very helpful. Do not shout. A visual impairment does not denote a hearing loss. And this one's one of my favorites. Do not move items or furniture without informing an individual. I actually had a client whose brother thought it was really funny that they would rearrange the room on them. not so funny because they can't see where they're going, they can't find things, and so that's really important. And also cabinet doors, drawers, people have a tendency to leave those things open. Make sure you're closing them because the person who's visually impaired won't see them and they might get hurt. Do not assume every individual also requires assistance. Do ask them if assistance is wanted. I have some resources for information that are available since the PowerPoint presentation is going to be available on the Focus Conference website. These will also be available. I have MCB, Mass Commission for the Blind, as a resource. MaxiAids in your bags that you got for the conference, MaxiAids. Everything that you see on the table here, I got from MaxiAids because they're one of our state-approved vendors. So if you're looking for signature guides or beat balls or pen friend or talking devices, all those things are available in that catalog. I put up there the Commonwealth Equipment Distribution Program. That's Chris Plants and his organization, the EDP. They were out in front. That's where your folks can qualify for a large print or adapted phone. The Carroll Center, Perkins School for the Blind, UMass Boston, the National Eye Institute, and American Foundation for the Blind. They're also resources for information, just in general, on blindness and visual impairments. Do you guys have any questions for me? Oh, Susanna does. Oh, Susanna. Yes.
You were mentioning about identifying currency.
Yes.
Could you touch on a non-visual version of that? Because some people just can't see the bills, and although they want to hold, they want to know what they're holding.
Could you?
You're the presenter.
So Susanna was asking whether or not I could touch on identifying money and non-visual methods of that. So there are non-visual methods that you can identify money. You can actually mark money if you know Braille or if you just know a few of the numbers in Braille. You're allowed to mark the money itself, so you can mark it in Braille. You can, as I said, you can fold it in different ways. So you can keep the dollar bill flat, you can fold the number 5, you can fold the 10, etc. Or they do have bill identifier that's very small. It looks like a 2x3 identifier. Oh, Margaret's showing this. That you can get from the Perkins School for the Blind through the Perkins School for the Blind, but it's given through the currency reader. So if a person is a patron of the Perkins Talking Book Library, they're eligible to get the iBill to identify their money for free. They just need to fill out an application to do that. And then Margaret gave me her phone because there's also the non-visual way of identifying money using your phone, your iPhone, your cell phone. I'm trying to do this one-handed again. So what you would do, I put the phone over the denomination, and then it was able to tell me that it was a $5 bill. So there's many different ways, people, Margaret. There's many different ways that you can identify money nowadays. And like I said, a lot of people don't use money anymore, at least cash. They use credit cards, debit cards, etc. But sometimes for old school folks, that's another way to do it. Any other questions?
So what are your ideas on when somebody goes to a point of sale with a credit card, debit card, and you have to put it in that little thing and there's a lot of glare? What are your thoughts on that?
So the question is what are my thoughts on using a debit or a credit card at the point of sale because if there's a lot of glare? I think the biggest problem that most people actually face is the orientation of being able to put their card in. And what I tell people is, and I have a problem with this myself, is I take my credit card and I try to put it in and it doesn't work. So what I tend to do is I put something on the credit card itself that's flat. So like you could use a label, just like a little sticker to know which direction, because a lot of the cards have chips now. Which place on the card is your chip? The other thing that I've done is we've actually, for people who use their cards for shopping more at home, is we've used the Pen Friends to record their credit card numbers in the privacy of their own home, so that when they have to do something and they need to tell their credit card number and they can't see it, the Pen Friend has been very helpful for that. Out in the community, it's a little bit harder. Sometimes I actually just tell the person and I say, you know, if you're comfortable, maybe you could just ask them which way we're putting the card in, because some of the machines that you go to, you think it takes the chip, it doesn't still. You have to swipe it. So. I don't have a one-size-fits-all answer for that, but I do know that marking the credit card in a certain way to knowing which orientation is most important for most people.
Thank you.
Is that helpful or no? Or,
yeah, I mean, it's just so complex. So there's all different kinds of machines and,
right.
you know, and the orientation is one thing. Signing it isn't aware, you know, signing it in the ends of, I do see that a lot with the glare, you know, like.
If glare is an issue, so you're still asking about the glare yeah. sensitivity issue. If glare is an issue too, I ask people if it's a real issue, if sunglasses would help them. Even just for those small tasks, mm-hmm. if increasing the glare or decreasing the glare, so they can just pull it out, pull out their sunglasses of that. If they're totally non-visual, then that's a whole other situation.
Well, right.
Hang on one second.
Go ahead. Can you talk a little bit about visual fatigue? Because you know how much people don't know about that, family members don't know about it, and they think people can function visually with remaining vision. The same way all the time throughout the day, and that's not true.
So Julie's asking about visual fatigue, and what she's asking is whether or not I can touch on that. And basically the short answer for that is, you know, there are some people who function better at the beginning of the day than they do at the end of the day because they've been using their eyes for their tasks all day long. If you can use your vision as much as you can to maximize it, but if you can take these little tips and tricks and help to reduce the amount of vision that you have to use or use your other senses, or use your tactile ability or your auditory ability to do tasks, it might help your vision carry throughout better throughout the day, rather than try to use your vision as much as you can, and then by the end of the day, being as fatigued. And that goes for somebody even like us, that you know, you've been going all day long, and you've been physically moving, or in our cases, sitting and listening. By the end of the day, you're completely exhausted. So taking those tasks that you can do visually, you have to do visually, but then maybe using non-visual strategies to help your vision stretch throughout the day would be helpful. Does that help, Julie?
Yes, thank you.
Hannah, yes.
What I found is, I'm actually an orientation mobility specialist. I love going to grocery stores and drugstores, and as I'm checking out, I asked them, I said, what if you have a person who's visually impaired or blind and can't access their card? What do you do? And it's amazing how many say, oh, we were taught this, and they said, we come around and we show them, we help them. And so some stores are phenomenal. You just need to maybe ask. Like, you know, I'm having a hard time finding where I'm supposed to sign. You know, can you show me?
And a lot of the times what Janet was saying too is she's come in contact with stores that actually have been, the people have been trained to go out and help somebody. And we do a lot of that with our folks as far as being self-advocates and asking for help, but also asking for specific help when they need it. And if not, then educating the people themselves. Part of what we do when we're with our folks is community education. Not so much for us when we're in people's homes, but more we function as O&M instructors around the community if you're, you know, a caregiver or something like that. The unfortunate thing is, I think I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I still say the same thing. People don't know. People don't know that someone needs help, or they're a little bit embarrassed to ask. So most of what I do, too, is I'm also going out and educating people. PTs, OTs, social workers, all these kinds of things that you'd think they would know by now, they don't. And especially we go into this when it comes to the stores, and we talk to people about, you know, you if you are legally blind or if you have a disability, things like that, you can self-identify and you can ask for assistance because the stores assist you because of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So the onus on sort of falls on the person sometimes, but also on us as people to educate others and people out in the community as well. It's 3:00, so I don't want to hold you guys, but if there's any other pressing questions, yes, Margaret?
One thing I've found is if a lot of my credit cards, I will feel the top of the card, and
yes.
where you can feel the numbers, usually that card goes in with the numbers for the on the left hand, the middle to the left hand side, and it usually works.
So Margaret was just giving us a strategy that if, you know, you can feel the numbers. Now, unfortunately, these, like I just got a new credit card in the mail, it's all black. And the numbers all squished together on one side, so Capital One did that. One more question, Sarah?
Yeah.
An auditory what? An auditory board? So in my presentation, what I was referring to is you can actually make a board itself, so or you can take a tray. So what you can do is you can take this and you can section it out using Velcro boards that you need to make different sections for it. And if you want to use it as a communication board or you want to use it as a calendar, use it as an activity or even a daily reminder, you can do that with the assistance of a pen friend. So you would have something, you know, set up in a grid-like pattern, and then you could have the things set up with your auditory labels, or you could do large print labels. You can use Velcro to move the labels around. So I mean, this is a gross overview of a lot of things, but you can take this to the next level and you can really think outside the box, because a tray can be used for a tray, but it can be used for a whole host of other things too. So, does that help you, Sarah? Any other questions? You guys all stayed awake. I'm impressed.